Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. We are joined tonight by some special guests as we will be covering the premiere of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. This is your spoiler warning. If you are concerned about knowing anything about this movie, why you clicked on and downloaded a podcast that said Last Jedi spoilers, I have no idea. So, I am joined tonight by two guests. My sister.
Hi, I'm Lacey.
Name? Lacey.
Lacey, yeah.
Lacey. And an old college friend.
Hi, I'm Lloyd. Lloyd here. Proud to be here.
Lloyd.
Glad to be on the show.
Lloyd, the man of legend.
Man of legend.
Man of legend.
You got a better intro than me. I'm just your sister.
Sister of legend.
There you go.
Yes, totally sister of legend. So we've just gotten back from seeing Star Wars The Last Jedi. What are our thoughts on Star Wars The Last Jedi?
Do we have a... It was a long movie. That was my first, just the it had one
the
word
The longest
reaction.
Star Wars movie in the history of Star Wars movies.
Lots. Big.
I didn't really find it that long. I didn't even have to get up to go pee. I was that engrossed in the movie.
Well, it was very engrossing. Not to say that it wasn't engrossing. It felt like a lot. It felt like it was stuffed to the gills with content and things to talk about.
I'm going to let them go first because I still don't know what I'm saying.
Okay, well, the first thing that comes to my mind after walking out of that movie is how did Colin Trevorrow get fired? Because he's now been given a blank slate. He could literally have done anything that he wanted to, and he got fired for not being able to come up with a story.
Or maybe he just wasn't good.
Or maybe he had an idea, and they just saw it and were too shocked to even continue.
Or maybe they saw Book of Henry.
Maybe they saw Book of Henry.
That's a possibility. All right. So, again, let's issue our spoiler warning, because we need to let everybody know that we are going to be delving into full spoilers. So let's go around the table. What was the thing that you liked the most about this movie? Lloyd?
I'll go first. I thought a lot of the decisions they made from like a production design standpoint really hit me as just a step above what they did in Force Awakens. Snoke's lair is the coolest thing that I've seen maybe in a Star Wars movie in a long time. It was like, it felt kind of weird and like 2001 A Space Odyssey, and he was like, he was like a giant naked mole rat Hugh Hefner. Like he was like in a weird smoking jacket, but he was wrinkly and gross, and he had like backup dancers. It was cool. It was just cool, and they had like a bunch of stuff like that. You know, the speeders flying around at the last sort of action scene and leaving like this sort of like blood soaked trail at the end of it was just, you know, just really cool, like visual representations of a lot of the stuff. That's what hit me the hardest.
Chad?
I still don't know what to say about this movie. So I guess I'll say visually it's very appealing. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff going on the whole time. Through the whole thing and all 2.5 hours of this, so you'll never get bored looking at stuff. Even though I did feel the 2.5 hours, about the time Finn and old girl crash into the thing, I kind of felt it, but I'm like
Rose.
Yeah, Rose, that's her name. I could not remember.
Old girl was better.
Like Titanic.
And I knew it going in before she said her name. I'm like, I know her name is Rose, and she says Rose. But I can't think of it now. But yeah, it is visually very appealing. But I don't know. I still have to process this whole bunch of stuff. This is a lot of stuff.
There are butts. You just don't know what the butts are yet.
I'm trying to come to the butts. there's a lot of them. Yeah.
That's the pull quote. That's the pull quote we're gonna use for your review.
I'm coming to the butts. Lacey?
Is this question like what I like the most about it?
Yes.
Because I love the penguin hamsters. I don't know what they are. The little penguin hamsters.
Penguin hamsters. They're called frogs.
Sure, I love those. Yep, my answer's simple. Done.
What are they called?
Progs.
Progs?
Porgs.
Oh, they're going to make a lot of pork dolls.
They already have.
They're going to sell pork so dolls? Many pork dolls.
They have. They have a pork bobblehead. They have the pump, the pop vinyl. The pop vinyl. Exclusive to Hot Topic, but yes, they do.
Of course.
And if you go to Build-A-Bear, you can build your own.
That's why I avoid that place like the plague.
Chewbacca looked like a little single dad with all of his little tiny.
But he tried to eat his children.
Well,
which
a little bit of a cannibalism, but
I did compliment the production design of the movie, but that was the fakest looking.
Like
it looked like the most perfectly roasted. I was just putting it over a fire, but it was like perfectly stiff and golden brown. Yeah.
Even down to the little prong.
All right, Mr. Brian, what's your initial reaction?
Thing that I enjoyed the most. Old man Luke. I enjoyed Luke's arc in this movie. Even with the forced suicide. it's really interesting to see the world weariness, Jack Bauer-likeness of Luke Skywalker's character there, and to see him learn that his fate is not a fait accompli, that he still has something to pass on and something to do. And there are a few cameos in here that I like a lot, actually. But, you know, the fact that, you know, we get answers to some questions, not all the questions, but Luke is ridden with guilt and anger and frustration and disappointment because he did the exact same thing that all other Jedis do. They gave in to their hubris and it allowed darkness to rise, and him coming to terms with that and saying, you know, I can't save him, but I can course correct. That was what I thought was probably my favorite thing. So
interesting.
So, what do you think is the one thing that did not work at all in this movie? Like, what was the thing that, like, did, for you personally, you would have changed? Because I'm taking the entire Canto Bright thing out.
That it stretched and it felt unnecessary.
Like, I could have done without everything they did. Except for Finn fighting Phasma. I could have done without everything they did. I know it had a point, but...
Which was to set up the kids at the end.
I think that was like a byproduct. They needed Finn to do something, and they needed some way for them to get away from the First Order. So it was like, here, let them do this for 30 minutes. Like, there's your 2 hours and 30 minutes right there. Take that out. Nice little 2-hour movie. Everybody's fine.
Yeah, there's a certain section of that where it kind of felt... About halfway through it, I was like, would this little adventure be more entertaining if Poe went on this adventure as opposed to Finn, and Finn stayed back and was the guy who was just on the intercom, like, are you guys done yet? But yeah, I liked Finn's sort of movement throughout the movie a little bit better in this. He felt like he had more of a specific role, and he wasn't just, like, along for the ride. But yeah, that whole Canto Bright thing kind of, it was a little unnecessary.
I feel like Finn's character as a whole is kind of forced. I don't know if that makes sense. I feel like there's no real point to him.
Well, he's got... I mean, they're in a little awkward place with him because they've stretched a lot of the characters far enough that they don't feel... Like, going back to what motivates him and what drives him is a little bit... I don't know. It feels like...
There's nothing that motivates him except, you know, a desire to sacrifice himself at one point. But, I mean, like, he's literally, like... You know, I just want to get away from all of this. Like, I spent the entire Force Awakens trying to run away. I got burned, and now I'd like to run away again, please.
Well, it's... But, you know, when you think about it, he could have one of the more interesting... I mean, he has one of the more interesting backstories. He was like a child soldier. Like, he grew up fighting, and he was ripped from his home, and, you know, he has all this, like...
Inscription.
Trauma, and, you know...
Conscription. Yeah.
And... That could make for something really interesting, but they, you know...
And I guarantee you it will be something very interesting in a book somewhere.
Decide.
Will be some part of canon, but, like... I mean, I agree with my sister. I think that Finn does feel a little bit forced, But I think that's because they kept repeating the running away thing. Like, you know, he took up a lightsaber and tried to duel a Sith, basically, and did it to try and save a girl he really liked. And
that's not a good reason.
No, totally not a good reason. But, you know, instead of owning up to his heroic moment, it was kind of just like, I'm going to take the next escape pod out. And, like, that was just, like, a continuation of the thing that had gone on from the previous movie, and I didn't feel like there had been any advancement in the character at all. And then on Canto Bright, you just don't really get a lot of development of either of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get her sobs, you get her story about her sister before that. And to me, really, the point of the Canto Bright stuff is basically just to say, hey, there are people playing both sides, and they will help and do whatever that will benefit them and make them money. And now we've ruined their nice casino by riding horses through it. Like, that's what I got out of that, and, like, I don't feel like it advanced Finn's character, Rose's character, BB-8's character, or the story at large.
It's a filler, that's what it was. Yeah. That's what I feel like it was.
It felt like just a different, yeah, it kind of was maybe trying to do a different perspective on the whole conflict and trying to add that, you know, there's not really, you know, a good side to this, or there are people playing both sides, but yeah, you're right, it just, that didn't service anything else that they were trying to do. It felt like it was just a side perspective on something.
I think what it was, I think it was Johnson trying to make some kind of grand statement about Halliburton and, like, war profiteering and people making in the military-industrial complex. Mm. And that's great, but it's not subversive enough to be, you know, eye-popping, and it's not entertaining enough to be fun. So, like, it just comes off as something like, okay, so why aren't we back on Octu, like, working with Rey and Luke? Or why aren't we with the Resistance and figuring out how Leia can walk around in a towel now? Like, like, that's what it felt like to me, anyway. Like, you could have removed that and the movie would have been fine. What was the thing that didn't work for you?
Leia floating out in space.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, how did that happen? Like, how did she live? I don't understand.
Well, it just felt strange and out of place.
You mean Leia, like, Jesus?
Yeah, just especially given the context. It's hard to believe how that got through without somebody saying, this is weird, right?
Yeah.
This is weird.
And then we're going to have her, lay in a casket. And, like, we're going to have her, you know, recover. And then she's going to force open a door because, you know, she's never used the Force at all, and she's never been trained in the Force, and now all of a sudden she can just do everything with the Force.
Well, but almost worse than that, the thing that we talked about on the way over here and is kind of like, it's sticking with me now, is that the thing that actually bothered me more than that was her letting someone else go down with her ship. Because it did feel like her ship that just got, you know, like that people had to, you know, take over and stayed in charge for her, but, you know, she was the captain of the Resistance. She was the general. She like left and let someone else die.
Let her best cause. friend from the time she was six. Like, bye, yeah. See ya.
Which that felt almost even more like out of place and out of character. But you know, maybe it's in service to something bigger. Like maybe it was worth having her around for, you know, to, you know.
We've got everything. We've got everything we need, Lloyd.
Yeah. Yeah, to say that, to get that line out, which was good. It was a good line.
Well, no, it was, so you get the Luke Leia moment, since we got no Luke anybody else moments in the first movie. You get that one moment, which, after I thought about it, I like that the most.
Yeah, that's touching on a number of levels, especially because it's a kiss goodbye.
I thought it was funny that they kissed the forehead instead of the lips.
Right.
Could have gotten a little weird, but, you know.
It already has. Yeah. It already has.
Yeah, I agree with you about the whole out in space thing. Now, that was what I was going to say. It's, like, when I saw that, I'm like, okay, this is just dumb.
Yeah.
Leia returns as she's floating in space and the Force awakens within her and pulls her in.
I knew she wasn't going to die because I knew she had other scenes later. But I'm sitting there watching, like, she has to die now. There's, like, there's no other choices. There's nothing else that can happen.
Your body freezes, you can't breathe, you die. Like, yeah.
And they just kept the camera on so long, I'm like, I know she should be dead. And then she forced...
floated back into the thing.
So I hated that.
Who do you think flew better, her or Superman?
Let's not do this to me.
She just floated. Not. She didn't really fly. She just floated.
This is true. Happy. I'm not going down that hole with you, mate.
No. It's okay. Lacey.
You can't... They took all my answers.
Apparently this is going to be a point of contention with a lot of people, I think, is that...
No, because it'll all be forgiven because she has the line at the end about we have everything that we need and her filming was complete and she gave a full performance and...
Oh, no. I can like that and still hate this part because I'm going to hate this part for eternity.
Yeah, they could have figured out some other way to they didn't have to have her floating.
Those or rooms...
Did not have her in the room.
Well, those rooms...
I got confused because, like, when... And it blasted the room, everything got sucked out. But when they opened the door, nothing got sucked out. They just kind of, I guess gravity didn't, I don't know. Just,
the force.
Just walked back in.
Yeah.
Nothing else. It's just like another room that was completely sealed. Like, I'm like, what?
Yeah. They opened the door. I'm like, I don't know how this is supposed to. When she got to the door, I'm like, how is it going to get in? And then she just walked through the door.
There's
like,
no airlock in there.
I'm supposed to imagine that the smoke that comes down is like keeping all the air pressure regulated and she can just walk in. Because that didn't make sense. But all right, okay. We'll go
explosions
with it.
Explosions in space and twin sunsets are one thing.
Yes, this is a bridge too far. Yes,
this is a bridge too
far. It took me a little while to understand why everybody was just staring off into space, like Rey and Leia and then Luke disappeared. That kind of confused me for a good, like, I felt like they held on to that a little long. Because I was like, okay, what's special about the sun? Like, everybody's looking at the sun right now. That's cool. It's a nice sunset. Is this, like, something that I don't remember from all the other ones? Like
the binary sunset that he's looking at. Yeah.
Double suns.
Twin suns. But I that was another thing that I was interested to see is that they really played up force communication. Like, this has not really been that much of a thing throughout the series. And now it's just like every force-sensitive being in the universe now has an open line of communication between each other.
Because Snoke had no idea where Rey was, but she's like, nope, just go open this channel and let y'all two talk. I have no idea where you're at, but I can just pinpoint you right here.
I think he was lying. It's a lie.
The whole
because it still happened afterwards. It's a lie.
This is true.
Can we talk about the fact?
It's just manipulative.
Right. Can we talk about the fact that again, one of the most powerful sentient beings in the galaxy, who can do all these great things and manipulate all these pieces into just the right place, cannot sense the fact that the lightsaber is being turned toward him. And it ignites and is going to rip him in half.
I thought that was kind of anticlimactic.
It was, but... my whole thought was he was just supremely confident that he knew exactly what was going to happen, that he just didn't pay attention to lightsaber. Is it the smartest thing in the world? No.
Coming from the man who talks about Order 66 and how the Jedis could not feel... The great, powerful Jedis could not feel blasters at their backs.
And most of the people like that are the ones to fall to hubris, which is what happened to him. So, I'll give him that. Is it dumb? Is he, like, being a little stupid right here? Yeah. But, again, hubris, I'll let you have that.
I don't know. I mean... It did. I would have felt better had, like, maybe he acknowledged that, like, in some way he wanted that to happen. Like, because that would, you know,
in the Sith lore, like, the master, the apprentice always kills the master.
Right. Yeah. It does seem like it's part of the plan, but the way that it was cut together and the way that his reactions were, you know, it didn't seem like that's what his intent was. He seemed supremely shocked, for lack of a better term.
To be
cut in half. And plus, like, he barely stood up. What's going to be in 8 feet if you're not going to stand up?
But, you know, it couldn't be done by regular thing. They had to do motion capture. Totally had to do motion capture.
I mean, the motion capture looks good, so I'm fine with it.
It did look great.
It looks all right.
It did look great.
So, can we talk about the fact that I think Captain Phasma now falls into the Boba Fett category most overhyped people who die very quickly and easily?
No. Boba Fett is all hype. He's there. He doesn't do anything in Empire Strikes Back. And he falls down a freaking Sarlacc pit. At least she fought him. And she was winning at one point. Until, again, this is everybody in here that dies because they're stupid. Because she turned her back and just got hit in the face.
Yeah.
But she put up a fight. What does Boba Fett do? What does he do? In all of Star Wars, what does he do?
He really just kind of stands next to Darth Vader, looks menacing, and...
That's all he does!
But he then gets, like, he fires off blasters, and he uses his jetpack to fly over to Luke's little Sarlacc pit thing.
And accidentally kills him by swinging wildly, blindly, and pats him in the ass.
She got hit in the face with whatever that swingy light-up pole thing was. She got hit in the face by that, and then she fell in some fire. He's just shooting all willy-nilly... And gets hit in the back and then flies into a Sarlacc pit? No, Boba Fett, I don't understand why people like him. He does nothing. She at least fought. Good for her.
So it was so important to have a female in that role.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. All we get to see is her eye. If I didn't know it was Gwendolyn Christie, it could have been anybody.
I was going to say, it could have been a man eye. He could have just been really feminine sounding. With a...
It was a whole thing when the cast picture comes out and, like, they get accused of being a complete and total sausage fest.
Because they were.
Because it's just Daisy Ridley and Carrie Fisher. And then they're like, no, we've got this Captain Phasma character that's totally going to be a chick. And it's going to be okay. And then, like, she stays in the armor the entire time except the time you see her eye as she dies.
This is what you call not thinking ahead. It's like, oh, they're giving us crap. Oh, we have this character. Let's put her in that. But you can't see her, stupid. It's not you're not helping anything. And they could have fixed it in this one. They could have done it a little bit more aware, but
she doesn't show up till 3/4 through the movie.
I said they could have. I didn't say they did. I said they could have.
I mean, I'll grant them that at least this time they didn't put her heavily in marketing the way they did last time. But I mean, I think she had more screen time in Force Awakens than she did here.
Probably. She did more in this one than Force Awakens.
Like die.
Well, I mean, Force Awakens, she walks on screen. Orders people to shoot. She gets bum rushed by Chewbacca and gives up the codes and thrown out of the garbage chute. That's all we see. This one, at least she walks up and, like, gives orders and, like, okay, I'm going to fight you. And then I lose. I'm dumb. Again.
They really have to make a grand spectacle out of executing people. Like, they can't just do it very quickly. Firing squad won't do. We have to go get the executioner troops. And then we have to take our dear sweet time doing it so that eventually...
No, they killed a whole lot of people in this movie. Not as many as the last one, but a lot. Because they just kept blowing up those ships like left and right. It was just like candy. Just like
How did Finn and Rose not get injured? Apparently everybody else dies except for because they're already on the ground. They're perfectly fine. But then what? The firing squad or whoever was going to kill them just like walks off and then they walk back? Like what? I'm confused. They were right there, and then everybody's dead, but then they're somewhere else.
Well, and then you know, Laura Dern decided Admiral Hodo wanted to ram her ship into the thing in light speed. Look, and
that was a cool-looking scene.
That was a cool-looking scene.
With the
muteness.
The muteness and then the sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a strange scene of... It was cool to watch Captain Phasma fight Finn and have their little battle, but then their whole, and then them getting back to the rebel base and like just making it in time underneath the door because they decided to leave the garage door open.
Second. Star Wars has been cheesy. But yeah. It's a good kind.
It's
of cheesy.
Yeah, okay.
It's the good kind. It's just you know it's gonna happen.
Right, and it's in an Imperial shuttle, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was an Imperial.
An Imperial three-wing shuttle.
Why were they firing at it when... I got confused. They were just firing until nobody got out yet.
Because they thought that it was a rebel...
But obviously wasn't doing anything to it. No. So why don't they wait until they come out and then shoot them? Sorry. It's weird.
There are a lot of weird things in this movie. We've covered the thing that you liked, the thing that you wish you didn't like. What is the thing that you think will be the most controversial coming out of this film?
Luke's dead.
By forced suicide.
That's going to be the thing.
But wasn't everybody's thought that eventually he would become Force Ghost Luke?
Not in this one. Because technically, he did. I mean, he did stuff, but he didn't. He never left. He never left the stupid island.
Yeah.
So people are not gonna. People are not like that. I don't think I have a problem with it. Tomorrow I might. Right now I don't think I do. But I think that's what people are going to be the most upset
it
about.
It explains how he could be fired upon by 5,000 AT-ATs in Survive.
Well, if they're... The thing that bothers me about it is I don't... If you're going to go that route and have him force suicide himself, why not just fully Obi-Wan him and just let Kylo Ren take him down? Just let him take him out. I mean, I know then you couldn't have the blaster scene because that wouldn't have made... I mean, I guess you still could have written that off as he just can deflect blasters now, but...
Because then, at that point, you're risking all the fanboys going, well, you're just ripping off from your catalog.
Which is what they do already.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's going to come up with the Obi-Wan, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope, you know, call back. The Twin Sons call back. The allegory of the cave callback.
I mean, if you don't want callbacks, then you don't want these movies, period. I mean, you're going to get callbacks. That's what it is. The Obi-Wan line thing, I liked it. It fit. It
was a way to put Carrie Fisher in the movie a little bit more.
And we get to see it from, like, way back when, and everybody has a certain feeling about that, so... Could you say it's cheap? Maybe, but it worked for the scene it was in.
Yeah, and this one felt less just sort of rehashing things that had already been done. It felt more just evocative of like the old series, whereas Force Awakens just felt like they were taking bits and pieces and whole chunks and just copying them. I think they did a little bit better job of sort of melding it into a more natural story. It didn't feel quite as forced.
I agree with that.
That's my statement. Well, like, there are still things, right? Like, the whole thing in Snoke's room looks and feels very much like Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Like, down to the conversation in the freaking elevator. Like, you know, that feels very much like Return of the Jedi. The allegory of the cave. You know, here we go again. Except this time, she sees herself. But she doesn't see herself in any kind of evil way. She just sees herself as, you know, there.
Well, that bit was a little bit strange.
I liked the way they did it. That was trippy. Interesting. Yeah, that was an interesting sort of...
I don't really know how I feel about it. I don't hate it, and I don't like it. I'm just kind of like, eh.
I don't think that'll be as controversial as Luke's death, but I think it'll be a controversial... That was what I was going to say. It's probably going to be the most controversial thing, is that, like, the way they handled Luke's... Rey's parentage, which was... I thought was great. I thought that was awesome, just to be like...
They were drunks!
There's nobody.
They were drunks who traded you for alcohol.
You want a purpose in this whole thing, and you don't...
I feel like that's
really
going to disappoint a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because everybody's theories... Because that's one of the biggest things was, ooh, we get to find out who her parents are, and then it's kind of like, oh, doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Which kind of... I mean, that's cool, and it strikes to the core of her as a character. She just wants there to be something else. Like, she wants there to have a place in this whole big thing. And it just has to come from her. It just can't, you know, it's not going to be that she's sacred in blood or, like, has some, you know, crazy lineage.
For any of the fanboys that are going to complain about her not having, like, lineage, these are the same people who are like, this thing is too insular. Everybody's related to everybody. Here, you have somebody related to nobody.
But she's now the only hope.
Yeah. She's the only hope. She has no ties to anybody, and you're going to hate it because all of your little theories have gone out the window, but it's exactly what you've asked for, so...
Well, the fanboys are not going to be...
I know. Either way. Yeah, you can't make them happy.
But, I agree. It is a nice way to inject some, you know, something different into it and not have it all just, insular and self-related. But now the whole Mary Sue argument's just going to be... blown up, that she's just too powerful for no reason and she has no right to be.
I mean, everybody in this movie that if they can sense the Force, they can do a whole bunch of stuff they should not be able to do. So,
hey,
if you're going to say she's too powerful. I mean, like you said, Leia's never done half the Force stuff she's ever done. She just survived being out in space.
For like 15 minutes.
Just out there surviving. Maybe
her like key force is healing, and it healed her own body.
You say key force is like that. Yeah. Well, now we're branching off into other stuff in the force.
Hey,
we got and you know, Finn can totally move rocks. What do you think is going to be the most controversial thing, Lacey?
I don't know. All right. I watched the movie. I enjoyed it. Now I'm here.
Do you have a controversial moment, Brian?
I agree with your two statements. I think the things that people are going to pull out of this the most are the fact that Rey's parents were drunks who traded her for nothing and ended up dying in a potter's field, and that Luke committing forced suicide at the end is going to cause some issues. I think Yoda basically allowing the sacred text of the Jedi Order to be burned is going to cause some problems.
But the whole point was that the Force doesn't come from books and a tree in a sacred place. It comes from within.
I think it's more to the point of...
Midichlorians are not a thing?
Well, all you Star Wars fans, you're holding on to all the stuff that's come before. Here, I'm lighting it on fire. It's gone. Let the past go. That's the theme of this movie.
It felt a lot like they were saying that directly to the fans.
Yeah, it was like...
let it go.
Yeah, as soon as they did it, I'm like, oh yeah, I know who this is for. Yeah. Like, all you people love the books and all this stuff, he's literally burning them right now. Let it go. And that might be more controversial now that I think about it. Because they are not
going... Put that way, it does make a lot more sense.
Yeah, because... I mean, it's very overt. It's like, fans, here, I'm burning you.
Kylo says it how many times? Let the past die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they say it, he says it at first, and it's just like, you know, whatever. But now it's like, I'm telling you to let it go. You're not going to like it. Let it go. And they're going to just, I don't know. I'm curious to see how people react to this.
I feel like the most controversial thing coming out of this movie will not only be those things, but will also be Kylo Ren's arc. Here's a dude who everybody thought there was no way he could be redeemed. He gets his redemption moment, and then he takes a giant dump on it and doubles down on the darkness. And so now you have Supreme Leader Kylo Ren, and there's, you know... there is good in him. Well, now you've pretty much squashed out all their hope for there to be any good. That he was so tormented by the ghost of Luke Skywalker, who was going to kill him, by the way, for a brief second.
Because of what story you believe.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a theme of Star Wars, which is dueling troops. There always two are there, and not just Master and Padawan. Sometimes there's always two troops, you know? I think that Kylo's arc and the, you know, bombardment of trying to kill Luke with 5,000 lasers and, you know, the miniature lightsaber battle and him basically doubling down on the evil after, you know, having his redemption moment is going to be problematic for a lot of people, especially because he's basically now going to become the Joker, and in that some men just want to watch the galaxy burn. I don't want the First Order to win. I don't want the Resistance to win. I just want both sides to be blown up so that we can start all over again. And I think that's going to be a controversial stance for him going forward.
I just feel like he's a whiny baby. Like, I think I'm probably the only person who actually really, really dislikes him. Because I know a lot of my friends, they love him for some weird reason. But he reminds me of Carl off The Walking Dead. I hate Carl. He's whiny. No one really likes him. He's just there. And he complains about everything. And then you really... I have no idea why the whole, like, light thing came. Where he was like, oh, thinking about it. And then all of a sudden just went, like... straight down the deep, darkest path that you can go. And it's like, no, I have power. I need everything. It's me, 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 me. Like, I was really confused about that. Definitely thought it was going to go a different way.
Well, I never thought, after he killed Han, I mean, say what you will about how they earned that in that first movie. Like, he killed Han, like, there's no redeeming him. I think they gave him redeeming qualities in this one, but I knew that he's done. Like, most fans are like, he's done. I'm done with him. I want him to die. I don't care when, but I want him to die. So yeah, he saves Rey, but there's never part of me that believes like, oh, he's really turned. He is.
It's the Roman Reigns effect. You can like make him look like a heel, but I'm not gonna totally buy him as a heel until he actually, you know, goes there.
He might just be manipulative. The whole thing could be an act. He just wants Rey because he knows Rey's powerful and he wants her on his side. It's better to be with him than against him.
I mean, at that point, she's the only one that can stop him. So.
Right. And the way to get to it is by kind of manipulating the truth a little bit. We really don't know what story is correct, Luke or his, and
we'll never know now.
Trade it like it's believable, and you can kind of feel for him. So,
well, I mean, in the end, Luke did admit to at least like a certain extent of it being, you know, that thought was there, that intent was there, even if it was just for a moment. But I do still like Kylo Ren's character, and I think that's probably going to be their biggest challenge moving forward, is that, you know, a lot of people do hate him, a lot of people do think he's irredeemable, but they're, you know, he is, to at least some part of the audience, a very sympathetic villain, and going for, he is all they have now.
He is
the big bad in the next movie, as, you know, unless they come up with some other way to surmount that, and that's tough. That's a tough position to be in, to have your very small resistance fighting someone who you kind of are not rooting for, but you like to see, you want to keep seeing more of them. You want to see
the last vestige of the Skywalker family. Was that the only one who caught the part where Luke finally gives us the answer about how the Jedi Temple got destroyed? And he's like, crumbled me underneath the cave, and then he went and he destroyed the Jedi Temple, and then he took like 5 of my guys and killed the rest and left. I'm under the impression those are the Knights of Ren.
Which
we have not heard anything about.
Yeah.
Like, we have not physically seen the Knights of Ren at all, except for that 30-second flashback sequence. Mm-hmm. So, like, there are 5 other Jedis that were potentially trained by Luke Skywalker who turned to the dark side who are still roaming around the galaxy somewhere?
In theory, yeah.
That could be a source of something, because now we're in a tough position for both of them, because they're both kind of still apprentices without masters. Rey doesn't have anyone to teach her, as if Luke did, in fact. I mean, he force suicided, so he's gone, but I don't, you know, in this context, I'm not sure what gone means, you know, when you can just come back as a ghost and control the lightning.
You're a god.
But maybe that is a potential source of something, because they do talk him up a lot in just dialogue, that he's, you know, he's the leader of the Knights of Ren, he's the great and terrible Kylo Ren, but he hasn't really done a whole lot.
Except to Rey.
He's done some, you know, bad stuff, but nothing that would, like, set him even anywhere near the level of, like, a Vader.
No, he hasn't killed, like, 15 people who were inconsequential when they made him angry. Like, he gets angry, he just throws a Force temper tantrum and, you know, bashes things that are around him. He doesn't kill anybody. I mean, the only person we've seen him kill is the member of the Church of the Force that, Max Van Sandow plays in the first opening scenes of Force Awakens. Like, that's literally the only person we've seen him kill.
Criminal underuse of Max Van Sydow, also.
But that character, if you read about that character in the new canon, there's plenty of room to go with him. Because he is essentially a Indiana Jones of the Force. Like, he works with Luke Skywalker in the period between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens to go track down all those artifacts that are in that tree that we see that Yoda sets fire to. And they go on adventures trying to get those objects, and they run into Empire forces. And so it's a very tricky thing. So there's a whole world that you could, you know, think about Indiana Jones in the Star Wars universe with someone, you know, who's not quite a Jedi, but not quite a layman. I mean, that's a whole nother universe that you could go down of movies. But if you think about Kylo Ren, we haven't seen him do anything overly malicious to anybody except Finn and Rey. So,
and Han.
Well, that was Harrison's doing. He was like, "Here, please."
I don't want to do this
anymore. I don't think that's what he meant when he was trying to get him to come over. Like, plunge your lightsaber right through my heart. Yeah, that's what.
There are those conspiracy theories out there that think that, you know,
that he did it on purpose for a good reason.
Right.
Which I thought was weird.
Very weird.
Real weird.
real weird. Okay. So, now that we've touched on a lot of this, what did you think of John Williams' score? Was it noticeable? Was it distinct? Was there any parts, pieces of music that really stood out to you at all?
There was one. Which scene? There was one time where I felt the score change. I think it was during the salt speeders, the red fog speeders. There's one moment, and I can't remember where it is now, that, like... I don't know. But other than that, it felt like typical John Williams score.
I mean, I think it was better than The Force Awakens. I remember watching The Force Awakens, like, I don't really like this. This isn't what I would expect for Star Wars. There are parts of it that I like. I like Rey's theme, like, and a few other things. But I remember watching this, like, the score's just in. And this one, I can't pinpoint any specific parts, but I know I was watching, it was like, this feels right.
Yeah, so, it was appropriate.
Yeah.
All right.
Wait, do you have a section? Did you have some score maybe?
Yeah.
Well, I was like, the moment when Rey's training with the lightsaber and she cuts the rock in half and you hear her theme playing, I thought that was really cool. And then the crescendo that he builds to in the Luke and Kylo fight was, I thought, really, really well done as well. And then, of course, the Twin Sunsets music as he's committing forced suicide, which was, you know, just very appropriate. And then the subtlety of the soft music when Luke goes to kiss Leia on the forehead, which I think will be a thing. I also liked the fact that they called back the whole line that Luke has at the beginning part of the movie about, what do you want me to do? Go light my lightsaber and stand in front of the entire First Order? And then one of the most beautiful shots in the history of Star Wars is literally Luke Skywalker standing in front of the First Order with his lightsaber. And I want that painting somewhere. Because it was just a breathtakingly beautiful shot. And I thought the music was executed quite well there. And I thought Johnson's, the cinematography was, and shot composition was really well done. There were no overly crowded frames, except I felt like maybe some of the Canto Bright stuff.
Yeah, that felt a little chaotic. I mean, that, you know, kind of on purpose, I'm sure, just to see this. And it'll,
to cram as many creatures in as you can.
That'll be the nice thing to go through that, you know, shot by shot and pause on stuff and be like, what did you do here? What did you... What crazy dice game are these aliens playing, you know?
And that's another thing about the dice. Where did those dice come from?
I was confused about that, too.
Yeah, they were very... They got very important very quickly.
And I was like, oh, why do I not remember this?
They got important, and then also they force vanished. My thought is that's a connection to the Solo film. The young Han Solo film. I'm fairly certain we will find
probably out
gets those beads.
Where those beads came from, at least, and why they were important to Han, and why he would have given them to his bride. So where do we go from here? What do you want out of an Episode 9 directed by J.J. Abrams?
They tied up so much that they kind of have to make a new inroad somewhere into this.
Kylo's gonna take a long time to hunt down Rey.
Yeah, I think I agree that something that you said was that, like, it's gotta take place way farther in the future. Mm-hmm. They have to push it way back, but how far back do you go, and at what point
can't age up Daisy Ridley in the next 2 years. I mean, they start filming in February.
How old is she?
25.
No, I meant in the movie.
They never specify, but she's supposed to be like somewhere around 18, 19.
I was going to say, because she could be a young teenager in 10 years. If she's like 17, 10 years, it's 27. Like, age that much in that amount of time.
That'd be the longest gap between movies outside of Force Awakens to him. Return of the Jedi.
They can keep Leia's fingernails immaculate. And then they can keep her beauty products where she doesn't age.
What did you think about the hairline?
Her hairline?
No, not about her hairline, but the line about her hair.
Oh, yeah, I didn't understand that. It was more of like okay, we all know that your hair is different. You don't have to point it out.
Yeah.
I think it was just like supposed to be like a funny thing to kind of
Call back to the buns.
Yeah.
which her daughter calls back to anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough.
This is what confuses me about, like, when I write the book on the making of the Star Wars. Like, what exactly was Colin Trevorrow's issue? Because they are literally like, Luke is dead. Leia is going to end up dying, passing away of natural causes or whatever in between films.
Well, she has to.
Right.
Han's dead.
Yoda's a Force ghost. The sacred text of the Jedi Order have been burned along with the tree and all of that. R2 and C-3PO are still around. The Resistance is down to like 18 people. The First Order's, you know, class Star Destroyers are all gone. Their Force Cannon, their little, Starkiller base engine is destroyed. Phasma's gone. Snoke's gone. Hux is there, just being annoying as ever. Like,
wait, did they destroy the battering ram cannon?
Yes, they did.
Did they? I don't think they did.
I don't think they did.
No, because you remember Rose.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't really know what she did or what the point of that was. Sacrifice herself for somebody else.
And then, but she needed that kiss. Come on, she needed that kiss.
No, I don't even want to talk about that.
No, talk about it. That's why we're on the podcast.
That was one of those cheesy moments. I was like, really, really?
And then
she thinks she's about to die. So the last thing that she wanted to do on Earth was to kiss this random guy that she only met like a couple days ago.
They went through a lot, though.
They went to a casino planet.
Spend some jail time together.
they almost died together. They multiple stared into times. Each other's eyes in the executioner's room. You know, that earns a smooch, I think.
A one-sided smooch, mind you.
Yeah, well, you're going to make all those young teenage girls who watch Star Wars pissed off because they're all Finn and Rey.
Well, he is overly concerned about where she is at all times.
Yeah.
And she's overly concerned about where he is, like, to the point where
she was a little upset when he put the blanket over Rose.
It did feel like they were making some statements in that little scene about
they
where
did.
And then her and Poe sort of making eyes when they met. They had a little thing there.
Hi, I'm Poe.
Yeah.
Even though he should have met her in
the
last one.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, wait.
Like, you've all been in the same place.
Did they ever?
We never saw them on screen together, but you would just assume.
Yeah.
That they occupied the same space.
And then he was a creeper. I know. I know you're Rey.
But, I mean, look at all that has been done in two movies. I mean, all you've got left is Kylo Ren, General Hux, and Rey. You have a whole bunch of young people who have been inspired now to be a part of the Resistance, and I bet you that kid ends up being the lead of the new trilogy. But, you have a completely blank slate. You can push this thing 5-10 years into the future and be fine and wrap up the Kylo and Rey story. But how do you get there?
Well, like, that's, I feel like, you know, if you ask, like, why Colin Trevorrow couldn't make it. This is a tall order, the film. You have to do something that continues on with this story and closes it up, but you almost have to open up a new conflict here to make it work. You have to give some sort of catalyst for this to open itself back up. And I don't know who or what that is.
He can't just spend years chasing her through the galaxy.
He could. I wouldn't advise us to go that route. But I don't know. They can do anything. So.
But you have to wrap up the Kylo and Rey story.
Yeah, this feels, and I heard somebody else say this. This feels like The Force Awakens was like a prologue to this. Like, this is, like, the first one. Because it feels like there should be
this feels else. Like one and two combined.
Yeah, it feels like there should be something else that happens mm-hmm. before we get to the end. But we're coming to the end next. So, I don't know what they do.
By the way, I love that Daisy Ridley had to come back out and be like, misquoted. It's like, no, you weren't misquoted. Like, you were just saying, like, I'm a 25-year-old girl who's, like, got 7 movies on her plate per year. I'm, you know, that's not a misquote. Like, you generally were not thinking a year, 2 years ahead. But yet, come back and calm fanboys' nerves, because they were freaking out, running around with headlines like, Daisy Ridley quitting Star Wars after Episode 9.
Daisy Ridley is not quitting Disney money. No.
No. Yeah. And Disney's not quitting Rey money.
No.
At all. But, I mean, I don't see, like, you could do anything you want, and shouldn't that be, like, a director's dream? And shouldn't that be Lucas's film's dream, because you've literally set the past on fire now?
And you can now sort of set up for a whole, you can set up for whatever your next trilogy is, or you can set up for something, you know, you can put yourself in a position to make, to use the final chapter in this trilogy as a springboard to the next thing.
But the problem is, the next thing is supposed to be something solely separate and apart, and Johnston's supposed to write and direct the first episode of it.
Well, but could you then not, like, say, okay, well, do we just pull the same sort of thing that we did in this one, you wrap up what you have, but you also leave a lot of room that you could jump 10 years in the future, mm-hmm. and start the next trilogy off with some things that we're going to see here.
I think that theory is going to disappoint a lot of people who really want Knights of the Old Republic to be this new trilogy.
Which, maybe it should be. Maybe they should explore there.
But I think that would be ironic, given the fact you just made an entire movie about letting the past die. And now you're going to go back to a point in time where Jedis and Sith are, like, at their height and in full power.
That's a good point.
I think it's tough, because they both Kylo and Rey feel like at this moment they're in need of a parent. Like, they both need a mentor, they need a something, and that's a cool place to be in character-wise, but there's... We don't have anyone who can fill those roles.
Well, I mean, Luke is a Force ghost, and we know that Obi-Wan and Yoda have been down that path.
Did he ever teach the third thing? He said he was going to teach 3 things. I know there's 1 and 2, but did they ever teach the third?
Did he get to lesson 3?
I don't think he did.
He said he was going to show her the 3 reasons why the Jedi should die.
No, but then he got all pissy until we got off the island.
Yeah,
that was like after second lesson.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever made it to 3. That's a good point.
Very good observation.
Well, I've been thinking about how I thought Rey's arm was going to be cut off in that time when she dropped it. Right before she dropped her lightsaber, I was like, yes, this is when her hand's going to get cut off. And then it didn't. I was really upset about that.
That's the first.
And then that led to, she didn't get taught all 3 things that she was supposed to. It's my thought process.
This is how to not get your hand cut off.
In the second episode of the Star Wars trilogy, which has happened both prior times.
This happens very frequently when it comes to lightsabers.
Wasn't that like one of the biggest advocacies for the crossguard lightsaber was that, like,
stops your hands from getting cut off?
I could not have that kind of lightsaber. I would chop all my fingers off, all of them. Like, I would have a nub. I'd have to, like, duct tape it to my hand because I wouldn't have any fingers.
I really do like the way that, like. And I don't know how much of it was, like, you know, Adam Driver's choice or characterization, but he fights with that thing differently. He holds it like a broadsword. It's like a heavy, weighty thing that he fights with, and it's cool to see that contrasted with usually they're, like, flippy and, like, very, very, like, acrobatic and stuff, but it feels like it has some heft to it when he swings it.
I feel like at one time his fingers, I don't know how to describe this. When you can't see what I'm doing. But so you have, it's like a cross, right? And you have the 2 side parts. Well, it feel like he wrapped his fingers around the top part. And that's when I was like, no, I'm going to chop off all of my fingers. Because he was like wheeling it like this. I'm like, I've never held anything like that before. Like a claw. I don't know. And that might have just been me not seeing correctly because lightsabers are
they do some very dangerous things with lightsabers. Yeah. You'd think
they
would all
have
some.
The horse knows where your fingers are. I don't know.
So I'm going to also say this. Maz Kanata has one function in this universe, and it is exposition. Mm-hmm. And she is not given the one bit of exposition that she needs to give. And now that the lightsaber has been broken apart into 2, I think that maybe Maz Kanata has a story behind how that lightsaber ended up in her possession and where they might be able to reforge it? Can they reforge it?
Did Luke maybe have some extra lightsabers laying around that he could...
I mean...
You can't just force it back together? I would assume...
I would assume he still has his green lightsaber somewhere.
The one that he was going to murder a little child with?
Yeah, that one. I mean, not like he
didn't look it. Little.
No, he was... Y'all
the big boy, he's little.
I mean, what is the one thing you want out of the next movie?
Rey's hand to be chopped off.
I would like Rey to struggle a little bit more with her place in this whole thing. I did feel like there was maybe a moment where they could have almost sort of like at least temporarily like turned Rey and left a little more open-ended as to whether or not she really... Because, you know, when you think about it, it's not that unappealing of an idea for her to, like, stick around with Kylo at this point. If Luke is gone and there's no one else, presumably, who can kind of, like, understand that she's, like, you know, Force-sensitive and, like, she has all this potential, he's really the one person that she's got that she can relate to. And I, you know, maybe that's... I would like to see more of that struggle and where they go with that and hopefully see her and Kylo's relationship kind of like...
I feel like she still thinks there's good in Kylo.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
She's got to.
Mm-hmm.
No, I believe y'all, but no, just gotta let that go.
I mean, we got that feeling in the forest at the end of Force Awakens that if that Earth literally would not have separated him, she would have killed him. So, I mean, we know that she's powerful enough and when motivated by anger, capable of doing extremely dangerous things. So, but I think the one thing that I want is a resolution to the story of how we got that, how that lightsaber ended up in Maz Kanata's hands, and then I want the concluding battle, the duel of the fates of Kylo Ren and Rey.
I think you get that. I don't know how important that the story where she got.
I'm sure it'll end up in a comic book or a extended universe canon book somewhere about Maz Kanata's story about how she ended up with that lightsaber. But I think
she has to get another one somehow. So I'm sure. Maybe they'll incorporate that story.
But I think you would have gotten that story had she been like connected to somebody.
But that's another thing. That's another thing. She doesn't know how to build one.
Yeah. That
she doesn't know how to build her own lightsaber. So
when it snapped apart and she and then Luke, you know,
had the fake one.
And he went off to, you know, Jedi Heaven. It's like, well, they burnt the book, so she literally has no way to know.
Yeah, but she has visions. Apparently, she'd been in all those places before, and she's like, I don't know what... They make her so powerful. And
they make her Jesus.
They're not, like, she's... I don't know. You need to see that struggle in a main character. You can't just be perfect at everything that you do.
Yeah, she struggled a little bit more in this one than the last, but still not...
She could still kill a whole bunch of Praetorian guards.
She didn't fall. Like,
but they did make her look like she was sloppy, though, at least.
Yeah.
It wasn't like she automatically knew how to wield a lightsaber correctly, like, while pretty and stuff. It looked like she was struggling a little bit.
Indeed. So overall, what is the thing that we think we're going to remember most about The Last Jedi in 5 years, 10 years?
I mean, the death of Luke.
Yeah, that's
his sort of like his swan song, and his like a really. I mean, Mark Hamill did a great job with it, and
Hamill for Oscar.
I don't know about that.
It's a weak field, my friend.
Ain't gonna happen.
It's a weak field. Weak supporting actor field.
In a world where people are tossing around James Franco's name for Disaster Artist, he may have a shot.
Well, I mean, technically, you could send him in there in supporting actor category, which is very weak this year.
Yeah, that could be a thing. But I liked what he did with the character and it did feel like it wrapped him up pretty well. And that's something I think that we'll remember.
I think I'll remember the Luke and Carrie moment.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I think that because of everything around it, I think that's going to live on no matter what.
So how did he get to hold her hand if he's just like...
Well, didn't you see, like, Kylo Ren and Rey, like, reach out and touch each other?
So, yeah. I don't know.
Through the Force channel that only...
I guess because they're brother and sisters, too, so their Force channel's a little bit stronger.
Yeah, especially considering that Snoke didn't open theirs. So, you know, he only opened Kylo's and Rey's Force talk line.
Which I guess now that it's open, it stays open.
I guess.
He established the Wi-Fi signal. He set up the network.
A secured password, man.
Yeah.
Well, how come he couldn't see her surroundings, but she could see his?
Especially when she tells him to put on a shirt.
Yeah.
Well, he says it.
That's what he specifically said, though.
And he ends up with water on his glove.
Yeah.
One of them said, I can't see anything else, I can just see you.
Both of them said.
Oh, I thought
Kylo said that.
Kylo said it, but yeah. I thought she could see it around him.
It seemed like she had a stronger connection going his way than he did her way.
Yeah, because she was on the awesome island.
I just chalked that up to them trying to, like, still further imply that she's more powerful than him, and he doesn't like that.
Yeah.
You know, that he's, like, uncomfortable with that she does seem to have more potential. And, you know, something that they repeated a few times with, you know, Snoke seeming to be more interested in her than even...
She's basically had little to no training, too, and...
Now she doesn't have anybody to get it from, except for Space Force Ghost Luke. I think the thing that we will remember the most from this movie in 5-10 years is the nuns.
The little
nun frogs or whatever they were.
Whatever they were.
There were a lot of cute characters in this.
There were. The little penguin hamsters.
And then, of course, we now know where blue milk comes from.
Oh, that was gross. They did not have to put that scene in there. I'm pretty sure it grossed me out like more than anybody. I think that's disgusting.
They look like perfectly formed breastuses.
Yep.
They look like udders to me.
Yeah. When it came on screen, I'm just like, why does it have udders and why does it just sit like that?
That's what I was thinking.
And then when he did, I'm like, oh, they really, I did not think they were going to do it. But all right, okay, we're here.
That was like a drunken bet that somebody lost and they were like, all right, well, we got to put it in now. Like, whatever, I don't know.
Had to explain where blue milk came from. And made its way from Mach 2 all the way around the universe.
I kind of wish they had gone a little bit farther even in that direction of Luke just being like, he's been on an island by himself for how many years and he's just become this weird, like, eccentric old dude that only drinks milk out of, like, weird...
He'd become Leonardo DiCaprio.
And, like, only talks to these frog things, so he doesn't really, like, he's not socialized. He got, like, they Yoded him up a little bit. Yeah. I feel like they could have even gotten more.
You notice the porgs never actually hung out with Luke, so, I mean...
They hung out with Chewbacca.
Yeah.
That's their daddy.
Even though it, like, their whole relationship kind of turned by the end.
Indeed. But no, I think actually the things that we will remember the most from this film are going to be the Luke and Leia forehead kiss, the image of Luke standing in front of the entire First Order with a lightsaber,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, his forced suicide looking into a twin sunset. So, all right, that'll about do it for our Last Jedi review. I'd like to thank my sister and Lloyd for hanging out with us tonight. Chad, we've made it through the entire podcast with me not mentioning that movie that's coming out next week.
And you shouldn't do it now.
And I shouldn't do it now.
The movie's coming out next week.
No. All right. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mess Theory.
You still at Shelly D, or do you have a new Twitter handle?
I'm not super active on Twitter, but, you know, just you can find me online somewhere.
Fine.
I don't have a Twitter, but I have an Instagram. # L is for Lacey.
And then her dog also has an Instagram.
Yes, Kelly the Corgi.
All right.
But thank you for having me. Yeah. It's been a great, great little podcast.
And we look forward to many more Star Wars adventures, the next one of which is a movie that has had its fair share of production troubles, Solo, A Star Wars Story, with or without Blaster. So, for Chad and for Lloyd and for Lacey, I am Brian. Thank you and have a good evening.